Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive. This time, we're going super deep into the world of scientific skepticism and its historical and philosophical roots.
Okay.
Yeah. You actually sent in this report on a symposium held by the Austrian Academy of Sciences.
Yeah.
It's called Science, Hostility, and Skepticism from Historical and Philosophical Perspectives.
That's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful.
Yeah.
But it's a very relevant topic, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, this is something that we're all dealing with these days.
Yeah.
You know, we live in this world where information and misinformation is just
constantly bombarding us.
Yeah. It spreads like wildfire.
Yeah, and it can be really hard to know what to believe.
It really is.
Right.
Especially when it comes to science.
Especially when it comes to science.
Yeah, because the implications can be huge.
Exactly.
So understanding how scientific skepticism works, I think, is more important now than ever.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Okay, so to help us unpack all of this, we have this report from Clemens Lynchinger.
Okay.
He's a writer who attended the symposium.
Okay.
And he's coming at it from a humanist and atheist perspective.
Interesting.
Yeah. And from what I've read, he definitely didn't hold back on his critiques of the symposium.
Oh, really? So he's a bit of a firebrand.
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that makes things interesting.
It does. I think it's always good to have those dissenting voices, you know?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It challenges us to think critically.
Right. And it pushes us to re-examine our own assumptions.
Exactly.
So let's dive into Lynchinger's take on the symposium.
Okay. Sounds good.
He starts off by kind of mapping out this spectrum of scientific skepticism.
Okay.
You know, you have constructive criticism at one end.
Right.
And then all the way at the other end, you have outright denial of science.
You have flat earthers.
Exactly. And right. Everything in between.
Yeah. Yeah.
He also brings up this term pseudoscience.
Right.
Which he suggests is sometimes used to discredit legitimate scientific fields.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Like, unfairly labeling something as pseudoscience to shut down the conversation.
I see.
And there's this one quote from the symposium that he includes that I think is really powerful.
Okay, what is it?
The more society-shaping science becomes, the more social struggles ignite around it.
Wow, that is a good one.
Yeah, it really highlights how science is never really separate from society.
Politics.
Yeah, it's intertwined with our values, our beliefs, and our fears.
Absolutely.
And that's where things can get messy.
Very messy.
Okay, so speaking of messy things.
Oh boy, here we go.
Lynchinger dives into an analysis of Donald Trump's science skepticism.
Oh, wow. That's a hot topic.
It is. It is. This analysis is by a philosopher named Martin Kush.
Okay.
And I know Trump can be a very divisive figure.
He is.
But Kush makes this really interesting point that by examining Trump's views,
okay,
we can actually learn a lot about how skepticism operates in general.
So it's like a case study.
Exactly. Whether you agree with Trump or not, his rhetoric provides this fascinating window into how skepticism can be used.
Okay.
And sometimes strategically used.
To challenge authority.
To challenge scientific authority.
Yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Makes sense.
So one of the things that Kush points out is that Trump and his supporters often portray scientists as like lone geniuses who are kind of going against the grain.
Yeah, like the maverick scientist.
Yeah, like the lone wolf fighting the establishment.
The underdog.
Right, and they even use Galileo as an example.
Oh, wow.
Which Kush argues is not historically accurate.
I see.
Because Galileo was very much part of a network of thinkers.
Right, and he was actively promoting his idea.
Exactly. He wasn't just this isolated genius toiling away at obscurity.
Interesting.
And this actually ties into the next big topic that Lynchinger tackles, the challenges of big science.
Okay, I'm intrigued.
So, you know, instead of this lone genius working in isolation, modern science is much more like a massive collaborative effort.
So more like a team sport.
Yeah, exactly. Like, think about something like the Human Genome Project.
Wow.
You had thousands of scientists all over the world working together to decode the entire human genetic code.
It's mind-blowing when you think about it.
It is. It's a far cry from that image of Einstein alone in his attic.
Totally. But I imagine managing these huge research teams, it must come with its own set of challenges.
Oh, absolutely. And Lynchinger actually points out several challenges inherent in big science. One of them being the difficulty in achieving consensus when you have so many different perspectives involved.
Yeah, it's like herding cats.
Right. And he highlights these issues like catch and toss authorship.
Oh, I haven't heard that.
Where researchers might contribute little bits and pieces to a project.
Okay.
But they don't fully grasp the whole picture.
So they're not fully invested.
Right. And then there's centralized control authorship,
okay,
where a single lead author might have disproportionate influence.
Oh, I see. So they're kind of calling the shots.
Yeah. Yeah. And it raises these questions about accountability and transparency.
Right. Because if something goes wrong, who's responsible?
Exactly.
That's a good point.
And do you think this kind of complexity in big science plays into public skepticism?
Oh, I think it definitely contributes.
Right.
You know, when research is so complex and involves so many players.
Right.
It's harder for the public to understand.
Like a black box.
Yeah, you don't know how the sausage is made.
Right, and that lack of transparency can breed skepticism and distrust.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
Right, if you don't understand something, you're more likely to be suspicious of it.
Yeah, like think about climate science.
Oh, yeah.
It's a field that relies on massive data sets, complex models,
right,
and contributions from researchers across multiple disciplines.
Exactly. It's a huge undertaking.
And it's no wonder people feel overwhelmed by the information.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot to process.
And sometimes it leads to doubting the scientific consensus.
Right, because if you don't understand how they reach that consensus, it's easier to dismiss it.
So in a way, the way science is done now almost makes it more vulnerable to skepticism.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Lynchinger also brings up another question, which is, should science even strive to be value-free?
Oh, that's a tricky one.
It is. And it came up in relation to Galileo and how he actively promoted his ideas.
Yeah, he wasn't just doing science in a vacuum.
Right. He was advocating for his theories.
He was trying to change people's minds.
Exactly. So it raises this question of whether scientists should just stick to the facts.
Right.
Or if they should also be involved in shaping how those facts are interpreted and applied.
Because ultimately, science does have real-world implications.
Exactly.
And those implications are often tied to our values and beliefs.
It's a tough balance to strike.
It really is.
And speaking of perspectives, Lynchinger points out this interesting thing.
Okay.
That there's a lack of humanist representation in ethics councils.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and it makes you wonder, you know,
right,
who gets to decide what is ethical in science?
And how those decisions are made.
Right. And if the people making those decisions all come from similar backgrounds,
yeah,
are we missing out on important ethical considerations?
That's a really good point. We need diverse perspectives at the table.
Absolutely.
To ensure that we're considering all the angles.
Okay, so let's shift gears a bit and talk about another topic that Lynchinger tackles, which is skepticism around scientific consensus.
That's a big one these days.
It is, and it's particularly relevant in our current climate.
For sure.
He uses the classic examples of the 97% consensus on human-caused climate change.
Right.
And the 100% consensus on the Earth revolving around the sun.
Okay, those are interesting examples.
And he points out how these examples are often weaponized by science deniers.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that.
You know, they'll say, well, if there's not a 100% consensus on climate change,
right,
then the science must be flawed.
Yeah, it's like they're trying to move the goalposts.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. But that's a flawed argument, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, dissent is a natural part of the scientific process.
Right.
That's how we refine our understanding and push the boundaries of knowledge.
It's how science progresses.
Exactly.
So just because a small percentage of scientists might disagree,
right,
doesn't invalidate the overall consensus.
Not at all. In fact, it shows that the scientific process is working.
Right, that ideas are being challenged and tested.
It's a sign of a healthy scientific community.
And let's not forget that sometimes those dissenting voices lead to groundbreaking discoveries.
That's true. Like, think about the theory of plate tectonics.
Oh, yeah, that was initially met with a lot of resistance.
A lot of pushback from the scientific community.
And now it's fundamental to our understanding of how the Earth works.
So the key is to distinguish between legitimate scientific dissent.
Right.
Which is based on evidence.
And rigorous methodology.
Exactly. Versus skepticism that's driven by
non-scientific motive.
Yeah, like political ideology or economic interests.
Right. So it's not really about the science at all.
It's about pushing an agenda.
Exactly.
And that can be really dangerous.
And how do we even tell the difference between genuine skepticism and this kind that's designed to sow doubt?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. So Lynchinger highlights the work of this philosopher, Alexander Reutlinger, who focuses on what he calls strategic science skepticism.
Strategic?
Okay. Yeah. So this type of skepticism, it's driven by non-epistemic interests.
Okay. Meaning
Meaning it's not about seeking truth.
Right.
It's about advancing a particular agenda.
So it's using skepticism as a tool.
Exactly. It's a manipulation tactic.
To control the narrative.
To influence public opinion, to shape policy.
It's very calculated.
It is.
It's scary, actually.
It is. And Reutlinger proposes using Bayesian confirmation theory.
Bayesian?
To analyze and counter these types of arguments.
Okay, now I'm going to need you to break that down for me.
Oh, yeah. Bayesian confirmation theory can sound a bit intimidating.
It does. It sounds very technical.
But it's actually a fairly simple concept at its core.
Okay, so what is it?
It's basically a way of assessing the strength of an argument.
Right.
Based on the available evidence.
So like a logic test.
You could think of it that way.
Okay.
And it helps us determine whether the evidence supports or weakens a particular hypothesis.
So it's like a filter for scientific claims.
Exactly. And by applying this framework,
okay,
we can start to see through the smoke and mirrors
of strategic science skepticism.
Right. And identify which arguments are actually supported by evidence.
Versus those that are just designed to mislead.
Exactly. Lynchinger provides some really great examples of how this works in practice.
Oh, down all ears.
He talks about how the tobacco industry,
oh boy,
deliberately funded misleading research,
right,
to downplay the risks of smoking.
Yeah, classic example of strategic science skepticism.
It is. And he also talks about how even something like the specific strain of rats used in medical research,
oh wow,
can be manipulated to produce desired results.
So basically, you can rig the game.
Yeah. And it highlights how important it is to be aware of potential bias.
Right.
Both in how research is conducted.
And how it's presented.
Exactly.
So we always need to be critical thinkers.
Always.
We can't just take things at face value.
Especially when it comes to science.
Especially when it comes to science.
Because the stakes are so high.
They really are.
You know? Our health, our environment, our future.
All of that is impacted by how we understand and engage with science.
Exactly. And that's what makes this deep dive so important.
I completely agree.
We need to equip ourselves with the tools to navigate this complex landscape of information.
And to be able to discern fact from fiction.
Absolutely. Because ultimately, our decisions are only as good as the information we base them on.
Well said.
And speaking of decisions.
Okay.
Remember how Lynchinger talked about doctors being present for the homeopathy presentation?
Yeah.
Well, he said that some of them actually protested.
Protested? Against what?
Against the criticism of homeopathy. Oh, wow. Interesting.
Yeah, he said they argue that many patients request homeopathic treatments.
Okay.
And even report positive results.
Oh, so it's like they're seeing it work in their practice.
Right. And it just goes to show how powerful personal experience can be.
Yeah, even when the scientific evidence might suggest otherwise.
Exactly. And it highlights the human element in all of this.
Right. People aren't just data points.
They have stories, experiences, and beliefs that shape their understanding of the world.
And those beliefs can be really hard to change.
Even in the face of evidence.
Especially if those beliefs are tied to personal experiences or deeply held values.
Exactly.
It's a reminder that we need to approach these conversations with empathy and understanding.
Absolutely. And maybe that's a good place to pause for now.
Yeah, let's take a breather.
And we'll pick up this thread in our next deep dive.
Sounds good. So it's a balancing act.
It really is.
Yeah, trying to respect people's experiences.
Right.
While also staying true to the scientific evidence. And recognizing that those two things aren't always in alignment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that can be really tough.
Especially for doctors.
Oh, absolutely.
Who are trying to provide the best possible care for their patients.
Right, because they want to help people.
But they also have to operate within the framework of evidence-based medicine.
And that can create these ethical dilemmas.
Yeah, it's definitely a complex issue.
Okay, so getting back to Lynchinger's report.
Yes.
He also mentioned some other presentations from the symposium.
Right.
Including ones by Alexander Bogner and Karen Kastenhofer.
Okay.
They're both from the Austrian Academy of Sciences Institute of Technology Assessment.
Interesting.
But he doesn't go into too much detail about their specific presentations.
Yeah, he kind of glosses over those.
He does, but he does highlight Helmut Denk's talk on homeopathy.
Oh, yeah. That's a topic that tends to spark some strong opinions.
It does. And I think it brings us back to this question.
Okay.
Of how we deal with scientific claims that fall outside of the mainstream.
Right, because homeopathy often positions itself as this natural or gentle alternative.
It's a conventional medicine.
But as Denk points out, the scientific evidence to support its effectiveness is...
Well, it's lacking.
Lacking, yeah.
And yet people still use it, and some even swear by it.
It's true, and I think that ties into this whole idea of auxiliary motives.
Auxiliary motives,
sorry. Yeah, Lynchinger brings it up later in his report.
Okay, what's that about?
It's this idea that people sometimes cling to explanations,
okay,
even irrational ones,
right,
when they're faced with difficult decisions or uncertainty.
So it's like we'd rather believe something, even if it's not true,
than face the unknown.
It's like a comfort blanket.
It is. It's a way of making sense of the world.
Even if that sense making isn't based on reality.
Exactly.
So where did this concept come from?
It comes from a presentation by philosopher Elizabeth Nemeth.
Okay.
Who was talking about the work of Otto Neurath.
Another philosopher.
Yeah, he was an Austrian philosopher of science.
Yeah.
And Neurath argued that when we're faced with these complex problems,
okay,
and we don't have clear-cut solutions,
right,
we tend to grasp onto any explanation.
Even if it's irrelevant.
That offers us comfort or a sense of control.
Even if it's not real.
Right, so it's like that saying, any port in a storm.
I get it.
When we feel overwhelmed or threatened,
right,
we're more likely to abandon logic and reason.
And just grab onto something that makes us feel safe.
Exactly. And I think we saw this play out in a really dramatic way during the pandemic.
Oh, yeah. The pandemic was a perfect example of this.
Right.
People were terrified.
They were faced with this novel and deadly virus.
So much uncertainty.
Conflicting information everywhere.
And it's understandable that some people turn to unproven remedies.
Or conspiracy theories.
Right, because it gave them a sense of agency.
In a situation that felt completely out of control.
And sometimes those auxiliary motives can be really harmful.
Like, think about the people who took ivermectin.
The horse dewormer.
Yeah, based on these unfounded claims that it could treat COVID.
It's scary to think about.
It is. It's a reminder that even when we have scientific evidence,
fear and uncertainty can really cloud our judgment.
And that's where clear and trustworthy communication from scientists and public health officials is so crucial.
Absolutely. Because if people lose faith in those sources,
right,
they're more likely to seek answers elsewhere.
From less reliable sources.
Which can have dangerous consequences.
It's like this domino effect, you know?
Yeah, distrust breeds misinformation.
Which can then lead to harmful actions.
Okay, so it's not all doom and gloom,
yeah,
right?
No, Lynchinger doesn't just leave us with a critique.
Okay, good.
He actually proposes a solution.
Oh, I like solutions. What is it?
He calls on philosophers, sociologists, and historians.
Okay, those are some interesting groups.
To step up and play a more active role in tackling science denial.
Okay, I'm curious how he sees them contributing.
He believes that these fields have valuable insights.
Right.
When it comes to understanding the roots of skepticism.
The historical and cultural roots.
Exactly. And he thinks they can help develop strategies to counter it more effectively.
So it's like a multi-pronged approach.
Yeah, it's recognizing that science denial isn't just a problem of scientific literacy.
It's a social and psychological phenomenon.
Right, and it requires a more nuanced response.
So it's not just about scientists lecturing the public about the facts.
It's about understanding the underlying motivations and fears.
And the cultural influences.
That shape people's beliefs.
And then using that understanding to develop more effective communication strategies.
Exactly. It's about meeting people where they are.
And engaging with them in a way that's respectful and relatable.
Now, Lynchinger also has some criticisms of the symposium itself.
Oh, really? Like what?
He felt like many of the presentations were too focused on historical analysis.
Okay.
And didn't really offer practical solutions for addressing science denial in the present.
So like too much theory, not enough action.
Exactly. He even points out that there weren't any feedback mechanisms at the symposium.
Like surveys or feedback forms.
Yeah, which he sees as a sign that the Austrian Academy of Sciences,
right,
might be a bit disconnected from its public mission.
So like they're a bit too caught up in academia.
Maybe. He's basically calling them out for being too insular.
Too focused on their own internal debates.
And not engaged enough with the real world.
I see. So he's saying that it's not enough to just talk amongst themselves.
Right. They need to find ways to make their research relevant and accessible to a wider audience.
If they want to actually make a difference.
Exactly.
It's like they're preaching to the choir.
Right. And that's not going to move the needle on science denial.
It's interesting because, in a way, this deep dive has been a meta example of what Lynchinger is talking about.
How so?
Well, we're having a deep dive into a report that's itself a critique of a symposium on science skepticism.
It's layers upon layers of analysis and reflection.
It is. But hopefully by unpacking these layers,
right,
we've provided our listeners with a more nuanced understanding of this complex issue.
And some tools for navigating it.
Exactly.
Okay, so as we wrap up this part of our deep dive,
okay,
what are some of the key things you hope our listeners are taking away from this conversation?
Well, I think the most important takeaway is that skepticism itself isn't the enemy.
It's not.
No. In fact, it's a crucial part of the scientific process.
Really?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's what drives us to question assumptions.
Right.
To demand evidence, to constantly refine our understanding of the world.
So it's not about blindly accepting everything we're told.
No. It's about being critical thinkers.
But in a constructive way.
Exactly. It's about seeking truth.
So how do we cultivate that kind of healthy skepticism?
That's a great question. And I think that's something we can explore further in our Nine Deep Dive.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. It's about finding that balance.
That sweet spot between being critical.
Right.
But also being open to new ideas.
And being willing to change our minds when presented with new evidence.
Exactly.
It's a lifelong process.
It is.
And it's not always easy.
Especially in today's world where we're constantly bombarded with information.
And misinformation.
Yeah, it's like a constant battle against the noise.
But it's a battle worth fighting.
I agree.
Because ultimately, our understanding of the world.
And the decisions we make.
Are shaped by the information we choose to believe.
So we have a responsibility to be discerning consumers of information.
And to think critically about the sources we trust.
And to be willing to challenge our own biases.
Because we all have them.
We do.
And they can really cloud our judgment.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into scientific skepticism,
okay,
what's the one key takeaway you hope our listeners will carry with them?
That's a tough one.
It is. There's so much we've covered.
We have. But I think if I had to choose one thing, it would be to remember that skepticism itself is not a bad thing.
Okay.
In fact, it's a crucial part of the scientific process.
So it's not about rejecting science outright.
No, not at all. It's about approaching it with a critical eye.
Asking questions.
Demanding evidence.
And being open to the possibility that our current understanding might be incomplete.
Exactly. Because science is always evolving.
It's a never-ending quest for knowledge.
And that's what makes it so exciting.
I completely agree.
So embrace your inner skeptic.
But make sure it's an informed skeptic.
One that's grounded in logic, evidence, and a genuine desire to seek truth.
Beautifully said. And on that note, I want to thank you for being our guide through this complex and fascinating topic.
It's been my pleasure.
And to all of you listening out there, thank you for joining us on this deep dive.
We hope you've learned something new.
And that you'll continue to explore the world with a curious and critical mind.
Until next time, keep asking questions.
Keep digging deeper and never stop learning.